Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My building has every convenience. It's going to make life easy for me. It's going to be easy to get things done. I will relax along with my loved ones.
Well, everyone wants to green their homes these days, as well as have all the latest conveniences. And here's an interesting example of a house that combines high tech, it's run on the internet, with sustainability. It's called the E-House, and I'm joined by its occupant and architect, Michael McDonough, along with Elias Dagger, whose engineering firm just won an award for the air conditioning system developed for the E-House with sustainability in mind. Michael, Elias, welcome to WNYC. So nice to have you both.
Thank you.
And Michael McDonough, tell our listeners who may not have heard about it, because I know you've gotten some media before this, but tell us about the E-House. Where is it exactly? What does the E stand for? Ecological or electronic? Tell us about your E-House.
It's in the Mid-Hudson Valley in a town called Stone Ridge, New York, in Ulster County. So that's about 100 miles from New York City.
And kind of where the Hudson Valley meets the Catskills?
Precisely where it meets it. Actually, one half of the property is in the Catskills and the other half is in the Mid-Hudson Valley. So we're
really? There's a line?
Yeah, there is. I think it's called the Blue Line.
Okay.
I think that sort of points to where E-House is. It bridges a lot of things.
What does the E stand for?
Well, originally, I just took it from email because it was the late 90s, around the turn of the century, and there was a lot of optimism about the internet at that point, if you remember, the democratic potential of it. So it was e-everything, basically, in 1999. So I just adopted it without thinking much about it, and because it was ubiquitous.
And what does the internet have to do with your house today?
Well, interestingly for me is it's, as I've thought about it now for 8 or 9 years, because the project's been in development for about that time, it has less and less to do with it. We're using it for remote monitoring and sort of basic look and see sorts of tasks. The original idea was that it would, much like your introductory music, that the house would be very automated. But I found out as I went along that you can do a lot of things with passive systems. You don't need a lot of technology. You don't need a lot of things to go wrong. And I've done a lot of work with building scientists and people who sort of use physics as a way of looking at physics and forensics as a way of looking at buildings. And in their estimation, sort of the more you simplify, the better things are. So that's been a lesson, one of the lessons of E-House.
And is eco-friendliness one of your main goals as well?
Yeah, but through a very specific lens. I think the overarching problem, the sort of unifying problem as we move into this century, is energy. In my estimation and the estimation of other people who look at this professionally, we waste about 90% of the energy that we produce and use. It's a staggering number. It's a profligate waste of energy. And so the E may now stand more for energy than eco or environmental, because a lot of the toxicity in our environment are geopolitical problems associated with it. I think there's a moral component to it. All of it goes to this profligate waste of energy. So that's what E-House is now about, is trying to get at that problem.
And I think that brings us to your friend, the designer of the air conditioning system, the award-winning now air conditioning system in your home, Elias Dagger. Is that your real name or is that your pseudonym for your mystery novels?
That's my real name.
It's a great name. Talk about the air conditioning system. What makes it special?
Okay. Just to give you a little backup, my firm does is really works on developing new technologies for bettering the world, essentially, lowering, just like Michael said, the abuse of energy that we do now use. When Michael came to us, we're in the process of developing a system that would likely be used in the developing world as well as here, but in mind was it the developing world, looking at what was going on overseas and how everybody wanted to live like us. And looking at essentially that, saying, okay, well, if everybody wants to live like us, you add up that population and you add up the amount of energy that we use and multiply it by what it's going to become, and you can pretty much figure out it's going to be a monster.
So the whole developing world in the Southern Hemisphere can't expect to have the kinds of air conditioning systems that people in the United States have, and have it be sustainable from an energy perspective. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the truth is, you know, we've had it easy for a long, long time. And when you have it so easy, you stop thinking. We like to go back to basics. If you were to go back to the age before compressors, before electricity, how did people survive? How did they keep cool? Maybe they didn't have the comfort levels that we have today, and they didn't have the buildings that we have today, but they had different ways of doing things.
Air conditioning, as you both probably know, completely culturally transformed the American South.
Absolutely.
Tom Wolfe once wrote a whole book about that. But tell us about your air conditioning system specifically.
So with Michael and the E-House being an experimental house, we really thought this is an opportunity to put our theoretical model that we have on paper that we keep talking about and trying to find the right opportunity for it. I was actually talking to some people in Pakistan about it. Let's do it here. Upstate New York is perfect. It's a perfect place. Michael was good enough to accept that. What it is, it's really a geothermal system. And what's different about it from other geothermal systems is it gets rid of the compressor. The compressor is really what uses the most amount of energy. The other part of it, and it would not work had the E-House not been so well built. So that's also another point that, you know, the E-House is in itself an energy efficient house.
What creates the cold?
The water in the ground. There's enough water in the ground that's around 50 degrees that is adequate to give you cold air and dehumidified air, which is very important. And that's what one thing we were struggling with. How do we dehumidify with 50-degree water?
So it's a system based on cold water in the ground near the home and, I presume, a fan?
It's got a fan and it's got a pump. And essentially, a fan and a pump that use a fraction of the energy that you would experience today from regular single dwellings.
You know, one of the first kinds of ecologically sustainable homes that I ever read about was what they used to call, or maybe they still do, in-ground homes, in-ground solar homes. So these were designed where part of the home was really under the surface of the earth to take advantage of the cool for certain seasons and certain functions. And the roof, not that high above surface level, was all solar panels to take advantage of the sun and create a lot of passive energy production in that respect.
Is
your home anything like that?
No, and very determinedly the opposite. I was interested in what building materials could be found, basically lying around and ignored for anywhere from a year to 5,000 years, and how you could build very contemporary-looking buildings that suited contemporary lifestyle, that would not be site-specific, and that could be applied more or less universally. The first 5 years of E-House were basically an exploration of that notion. I called it, you know, Googling a house, basically. I went through every facet of building that I could think of after, at that point, about 25 years of experience as an architect. And I researched for over a year. And also, I'd been interested in this stuff for about 30 years altogether. So I said to myself, what if you took everything on Earth that was the best, the most optimal, and you figured out a way to integrate it, to combine it, and put it all in one building, what would the result be? And the result is that you can build buildings that look traditional. You can design buildings that look contemporary. Anything in between, experimental, you know, kind of wing-dingy stuff that the younger people might be interested in designing, right down to, you know, a mock-up of Mount Vernon. And the technology, the materials, the building systems would allow you to basically reduce energy consumption by 50% very, very easily and up to 90%. On the air conditioning system, I'd like to back up just a second. The idea of doing this low-energy air conditioning system had been a gleam in my eye for about 7 years when I met Elias. And I gave him the basic ideas I'd been kicking around. And we had some support from New York State's Energy Research and Development Authority. And I just want to mention that because New York State is an extraordinary incubator of R&D in what I guess is now being called disruptive technology, where you really stick an idea out there like a technology incubator. And I think the people of the state of New York deserve a lot of credit for or they should know that their state government is hard at work doing this and they're really plotting the future of energy.
And hopefully that kind of thing will continue to get funded in the economic downturn. Elias, I guess your kind of air conditioning design for his house couldn't work in Phoenix, for example. Yeah?
It would not work in not in Phoenix. In some parts of Arizona, it would work very well.
Right. You don't go that far outside. You don't have to go that far outside of Phoenix before you're up in high elevations, and it's quite cool.
Exactly. The calculations we have done show that 2/3 of the world's population will benefit from this. But I also want to point out that this is not just about air conditioning. It's also about efficient design. It's also about integrated efficient design for dwellings, basically.
So for those of our listeners whose interest may be piqued by this conversation and are wondering, you know, could I retrofit my house or even my apartment to use this kind of air conditioning system, can they?
Depends. In many instances, yes. In some, probably not. It's not for everybody. It's not your silver bullet. And again, we're always looking for that magical solution. It's not it.
Do you sell them? Does anyone sell them? Or is this just something unique you designed for Michael?
We don't sell them yet. What the intent was, New York State financed the execution of this project. And the idea was, as an experimental model, to take a look and see whether or not this would be viable, a viable technology for others. And obviously, we've run through one season already. We're on to the next generation. So at one point, it's an open system. Anybody can take a look at it. Anybody can apply it anywhere they want. There's no proprietary technology.
Your firm, I understand, also designed a large residential water recycling system for a building in Manhattan on 57th Street. Is that correct? How does that work?
Well, that's essentially it's a sewage treatment plant that is at the Helena, which is a 600,000 square foot apartment building.
Sorry, 57th and what?
57th and 9th.
9th Avenue. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. If you were to take a look at high-rise residential buildings today, you'd find that half the water consumption is used by non-potable uses, essentially the cooling towers, the irrigation, and maybe toilet flushing. So what we did is come up with a sewage treatment plant that sits there, treats all the sewage water to potable quality, and then reuses it for cooling tower makeup, irrigation, and toilet flushing. We're saving about 50,000 gallons of water a day using that. Now, that's during the summertime. In the winter, it's lesser of an amount. But what the idea was here is to create a non-potable water utility, a central non-potable water utility, maybe for the city, because
at the level of the individual building,
either at the level of a individual building or neighborhoods or district-wide or others. I mean, we've done some district studies. As a matter of fact, I just came back from Saudi Arabia where I'm talking to them about that, where district-wide you would reuse all that water for non-potable uses.
Mm, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, the Center for an Urban Future, a New York-based think tank, just released a study that mentioned while the city now has 41 completed buildings with LEED ratings, that's the green building rating system, it puts us in the middle of the pack compared to other cities. We have 455 LEED projects in the works, And the concern is that many of those may now be put off because of the economic downturn. So it really raises the question, is sustainability sustainable in bad economic times?
Well, I say yes. I'll give you a quick anecdote. Around Christmas time, we had a pep talk, company pep talk, and I was essentially telling the staff about hard times to come and how it's going to be very tough to get through the year. And one person said, I have a question. How about all this nice R&D that we're doing that is really non-billable time and all these nice programs that we're experimenting with? Do these disappear? And emphatically, I said, absolutely not. We're doubling up on that because really now we have the time and now's the time because tough times are thinking times.
Good point.
They should not go away, is what I'm trying to say.
So, Michael McDonough, what will your e-house be like when it's all completed?
Well, I don't know when it will be completed, to tell you the truth.
Because this has been going on for like a decade, right?
It's coming up, yeah. 2010 will be the 10-year
Or maybe it's not about finishing. Maybe it's about the process.
Yeah, well, actually, Tom Wolfe is a friend of mine, and he said something to the effect that Monticello took 40 years, so I thought if it's good enough for Jefferson, you know, whatever. What it's become is really an open-ended exploration of disruptive technology, and that's with the eye toward green job creation. My firm also, like Elias's, we have an ongoing commitment, resolute, to working in these different technologies, and we're looking at advanced lighting, advanced what's called low-temperature snow melt, where you remove most of the energy from the snow melt systems. They're real energy hogs. We're looking at experimental farming, where we can get biodynamic and organic farming production at 10 acres of production on 1 acre, also using ultra-low energy. And this you could put on a building in Manhattan. You could put it in a brownfield. You can put it upstate, anywhere. That's also being funded by NYSERDA, that we're starting that this year. So, you know, when is a laboratory finished? I don't know. I guess when you die.
Well, it's great to live with that attitude. Life is always a process of development. So Michael McDonough, architect of the E-House. You can see some pictures of it on the web. We have a link on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Elias Dagher, that's D-A-G-H-E-R, founder and senior principal of Dagher Engineering. Fascinating stuff. Good luck to both of you. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, what if your company cannot afford insurance for your employees? We will look at a new kind of coverage for small business called 3Share being tried here in New York that actually cuts out the insurance companies altogether. Stay tuned.